Welcome all sports fans. On this podcast,
no sport is left behind.
I'm Justin Williams.
I'm Cabrera Duran, and this is our brother from Down Under,
me, Wallace Bruce.
We are the Pro Sports Podcasters,
filling you in on the latest news from the world of sports.
In this episode, we speak with former head coach of the Oakland Raiders and the Cleveland Browns, Hugh Jackson. We also talk a little bit about the NWHL and its return as the playoffs begin tonight with our Toronto Six facing the Boston Pride.
Welcome to the Pro Sports Podcasters. I am your host, me, Wallace Bruce, and I am joined by my co-hosts, Cobert Durand and Justin Williams. Today we have a very special guest, a developer of talent in the NFL. You know him as a former head coach in the league, and he has developed talent such as Carson Palmer, TJ Husmanzada, Chad Ochocinco, Joe Flacco, and Run DMC, Darren McFadden. He's also been working recently with NFL draft prospect Kellen Mond, introducing the one and only Hugh Jackson. Hugh, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me. Looking forward to having a discussion.
Thank you for coming on. It's an honor and a privilege to talk to you, sir.
Thank you.
First of all, what should we expect from Kellen Mond?
I think Kellen Mond is going to be a real surprise in the draft. I think he's very talented. There's not a throw he can't make. He's very intelligent, very athletic. I think he understands the game of football, and I think he has a burning desire to be great. I know they're talking about so many guys ahead of him, but I really think he's going to show what type of player he is. The guy had 19 touchdowns and 3 interceptions last year and played with a bunch of freshman wide receivers, and I think Jimbo Fisher does a great job of coaching quarterbacks, so I'm expecting great things from him.
Do you see him as a development project, or do you see him as someone?
No, I do not. That's why I cut you short. I'm sorry. He's not a development project. This guy's a quarterback, and I don't know why people are not talking about him more. You know, he played at Texas A&M, played in the SEC. He's played a lot of football, and so I think when people sometimes they start looking at players and you start comparing players to other players who've been in the SEC, maybe people think he's like Dobbs or some other people. Kellen Mond is just Kellen Mond. He is a really good player.
So this is a quarterback that could start right away?
Absolutely.
And you expect him to go when in the draft?
I don't know. I mean, it all depends on how people see him. I mean, I wouldn't know that, how the league sees him. But I would think for me, just me personally, you know, my opinion is he's going to be a guy that gets drafted anywhere from late first through the third round.
Now, this being a, again, modified lead up to the draft, no combine, do you think that hurts his potential?
Oh, absolutely. I think because more people, the fact that they're not talking about him enough means that enough people haven't seen him. We had a combine at the House of Athletes where, you know, people got a chance to see him throw the football, and I'm sure they were impressed with the way he threw and, you know, his size. Oh, he has all the measurables. But I think the more people see him, the more people are going to fall in love with him. And it's just unfortunate that that's not happening this year.
Yeah, no, that's really going to hurt the process, I think. We're going to see a lot of talent, I believe, fall further in the draft that we'll find out about later when we actually see them on the field.
Absolutely.
Now, Hugh, you mentioned the House of Athlete, and I did see some of those videos with Kellen Mond and also Marquez Stevenson and Sage Surratt. What can we expect from some of those other guys who were at that workout?
Well, I think you just said it. I know Chaz. Chaz is a former quarterback, turned defensive player. I think he's very talented, runs well, you know, athletic. He can sink his hips. I think he's a good tackler. You know, the question for him is going to be, is he going to be a downhill player? Because he's not an overly big guy, but he's big enough, in my opinion. And if he has a desire to go in there and stick his face in there, and obviously you couldn't see that in a combine or just workouts. I mean, that's what you got to see on videotape. I think he will, but that's yet to be known, you know, but I think he has what it takes to play. And who else you just mentioned? I'm sorry, it was hard to hear.
Marquez Stevenson.
Marquez Stevenson, again, I think the sky's the limit for him. I just think the more he continues to work and work at the game of football, the better he's going to be, you know. So somebody's got to give him an opportunity, but he's going to get a chance to showcase his talent and ability in the National Football League.
Speaking of opportunities, Hugh, when are we going to see you back in the league?
I don't know. You guys tell me. I don't get to control that. But like I said yesterday, I was talking to somebody and I told him there's no way somebody's going to tell me that there's 32 coordinators better than me. But it's been tough for minority coaches to get opportunities once they're out of the league. That's just the way it's been. I hate to say that. I'm sure you guys know in 100-year history, going into year 101, there's only been 19 minority head coaches. And those guys, when they're done, normally don't bounce back to coordinator jobs. Now, obviously, Anthony Lynn just did from the Chargers, but he is one of the far and few between guys that get that opportunity again.
Now, you've coached in a lot of different markets. I was wondering where you enjoyed coaching the most, whether it be at the college level or the NFL level.
No, I enjoyed coaching at the NFL level. I mean, it's the best of the best. You know, it's supposed to be the best coaches competing against the best coaches. So I totally enjoyed that. Not that I would not go back to college in the right situation. But again, I think at the end of the day, you love coaching. You love leading men. You love putting people in position to have success. And I think that's what it's about more than anything.
Okay.
Now, quick random question for you. If I'm sure you're aware of the XFL in its present day form owned by The Rock. If The Rock came knocking on your door and said, hey, we want to give you a coaching job, is that something you'd be interested in?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, because you kind of get to be your own boss in that situation. You know, obviously he's the owner of the league, but as the head coach and you know, you get a general manager, but it'd be somebody that you can really work with. So yeah, I'd be interested in that.
Now, to double down on my question, if somebody from the CFL were to come to you and offer you a coaching gig, would you take that too?
No, I would not, because I don't understand the rules. guys going in motion, going downfield for the ball to snap, that's a little above me right now.
You don't know the rouge?
Nah, I don't know the rules, that's for sure.
There's a point that we have in the game called rouge, which is like a one-point thing, which is if you punt the ball and it hits the field goal, it's just 1 point.
Yeah, the rouge. I got it now.
There you go. You're qualified. You pass the test.
It's two different games, two different sports. But Hugh, you have an eye for talent. You're able to identify players and you're able to develop them. What are key qualities that you look for in quarterbacks, especially being a former quarterback yourself?
I think when you look for quarterbacks, first and foremost, I think people, and as you know, in the National Football League, a lot of people get it wrong. The people who pick these guys, in my opinion, they don't, it's all about the fit. Now, I mean, does a guy fit your team and what you have? Because if you bring a guy to a team, that means you already have some players. And so you're trying to get this quarterback to be as comfortable as he can. So first, I think it's the fit. Does this guy fit the vision that we have for a quarterback? Then obviously it's pinpoint accuracy. Can the guy throw the ball accurately? And can he throw the ball under duress when people are breathing down his throat? What kind of leadership does this guy have? Because every now and then you're going to go have to demand that people do things the right way. Receivers, running backs, offensive linemen, tight end. You got to have that kind of mentality. So I look for more of an alpha mentality than most people do, but a guy also has to be cerebral, obviously, as well, because he's got to be uber intelligent, because there's a lot of football information, especially in the National Football League, that a guy has to digest and be able to recall when he needs it. But leadership, probably above the intelligence, because I think I can rep a guy and get him to where he needs to be from playing standpoint, but I probably couldn't do that from a alpha standpoint, from a leadership standpoint. So when you're looking for quarterbacks, in my opinion, I'm looking for a guy that's a prime, really, a guy that can toggle between being an alpha and being a cerebral, because that's what a guy needs to be. And then can the guy win? Can he win football games? I mean, has he had the ability to win? And he might have lost in college, but you see the burning desire in his gut that he wants to win, and that will show itself.
Given those qualities you just mentioned, a couple of quarterbacks in the league right now that I think are kind of at turning points in their career, Sam Darnold, Jimmy Garoppolo, which one do you think has more potential?
I think they both do.
You like them both?
Oh, yeah. When you say turning point for Jimmy Garoppolo, the guy was hurt. I mean, the guy was in the Super Bowl. You know, he is a He is a quick twitch, unbelievable anticipator, you know, anticipation when he's throwing the football. He's athletic enough. I think he's good in the San Francisco system. He just got to stay healthy, you know, and I think that's what it is. I mean, he went to the Super Bowl. He faced Mahomes, one of the best players in all of pro football. And then Sam Darnold, I just think he was in a bad situation. I mean, that's what I'm saying about the fit. I mean, the coaches, you have to fit the right talent around these quarterbacks to give them a chance to be successful. I'm not putting Adam Gase down. I think Adam Gase is a good coach. I mean, obviously, it wasn't the right opportunity there, just like for me in Cleveland, it wasn't the right opportunity. But at the same time, when you look at these things, people are now down on Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold had enough talent to get drafted where he got drafted, and that didn't change. So somebody's got to be able to look at him and say, can we help him and can we do the things that he does well? He's athletic enough. He has enough arm talent. He's intelligent enough. And he's a young player. He's a young player. So those are the kind of guys that you want to give an opportunity to. And I think he's going to be a good player in this league.
So if you were a coach of either franchise, you'd want to stand pat with their current quarterback.
Oh, I would. Absolutely. I mean, now here is a new coach coming in who has his own ideas of what kind of quarterback he wants. And to me, that was decided way before they made a decision who their coach was going to be. What I mean by that, that conversation, I should say, was had with that coach, whether they were going to get rid of him or keep him. I'm sure it was, hey, you come in and evaluate this guy. If you don't think this is the right guy, let's move on. And if you think he is, then let's coach this guy up and get him to play.
All right, solid.
Now, if you speaking of that, just thinking back to your time in Cleveland, you were the coach when Baker Mayfield came on the scene. Did you have much input in that draft process?
Oh, absolutely. What I didn't have, I mean, like I said, people got to go back and look at where that started. Our first quarterbacks were Cody Kessler and DeShone Kizer. I mean, you need to ask me about that process.
Yeah. Okay. Tell us about that.
No, my point was there's a lot of quarterbacks. I mean, I think if you guys know or looked at my history in quarterbacks, I probably wouldn't have drafted Cody Kessler, me personally. I wouldn't have drafted DeShone Kizer, me personally. You know, and again, I wasn't making the decisions, and I'm not trying to pass the buck. But, I mean, there was other quarterbacks, you know, one that's played the Super Bowl in Goff, Carson Wentz. I know he's on another team, but he had a sensational start to his career. And there was, you know, Dak Prescott, you know, who now just got paid like you wouldn't believe. Cody Kessler was drafted before Dak Prescott. So that's got to tell you something. And then the next year, you're talking about Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, you know, that group of guys. And so, again, I mean, you got to make sure that you get the right guy. But my question would be, were we really trying to get a quarterback? Because if we were, we had enough draft capital to get one. So we didn't take one. So when John Dorsey came on, and that's what I'm saying, you guys got to understand the history. Here comes John Dorsey, who's a football guy. Okay. And he's now in the building. And so we go draft Baker Mayfield, who is a NFL quarterback. And so, yeah, I had a lot to do with that process.
So in your experience, head coaches, or even as an OC, you would have a fair amount of input into who they draft, or no?
You better have. I mean, as the head coach, you better. I'm not saying that happened. That does not happen everywhere. And I think you guys know that. That's why they have GM. GMs are there normally to direct, make recommendations. And I think it's backwards, personally. You know, I really do. Because the GM don't coach the team. The coaches coach the team. So you need to take the coach's advice on what they need and what they're looking for. And that's why the vision of the organization has to be clearly spelled out on what kind of team you want to be. And the team you want to be is the team that the head coach thinks he could be. And if it becomes the team that the GM think you could be, that's going to be a problem. That's never going
to
work.
So it's important to have a marriage between the front office of the GM and the match day staff and the coach. Everyone's on the same page, one goal, one dream.
Absolutely. So think about it. Everything is good until you start adding people to it, right? So if you add people who don't have the same thought process, and people can have different processes. It's just when we move forward, we've made a decision that this is what we're going to accomplish and this is what it's going to look like. That's the most important part of this. And if you have one person that says, nah, I don't see it that way, and they're on the other side of this, and they're not in the coach's side of it, it's not going to work. It just doesn't. It's proven. And that's what happens to organizations, and that's what happens to teams.
Now, the league has moved to more of a mobile quarterback kind of under center. And you yourself was a mobile quarterback at the time when that was considered more of a gadget thing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see the league going forward and adding more mobility at the quarterback position, or does it go back to a pocket passer?
No, I think it's going to continue. That trend will continue. There's more guys coming out of college who are the best players who are athletic and who can run. You know, you look at Trevor Lawrence, who's coming out, he can run. Justin Fields, he can run. Trey Lance, he can run. Zach Wilson, he can run. Kellen Mond, he can run. There's more guys who are athletic, and you look at some of the best quarterbacks in the league today. Now, that being said, the quarterback that won a Super Bowl is not very athletic.
Correct.
But he's uber intelligent. He has uber experience, and he's one of the best passers in all of pro football. So there is a place for everything. So again, it goes back to what we were just talking about before. How do you want to win? What kind of offense do you want to play as? I mean, you want this quarterback to be able to be mobile and make more plays and create more confusion for the defense, somebody they really got to be aware of? Or do you have this guy who is going to be a pinpoint accurate passer, so you better protect him? You better have all as many of the best linemen as you can have to give him a chance to be upright and complete balls. And so that comes back to structuring and vision of your team. How do you build a football team around this quarterback?
Now, you've coached at every level, multiple positions. I'm wondering who you feel you learned the most from as a coach when you were in the league.
When it comes to coaches. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, every experience I had from Marty Schottenheimer to John Harbaugh, all of them have been great. But the best one for me has been Marvin Lewis, because I coached from Marvin on offense and defense.
Yeah.
And so when you look at that experience, I mean, that really helped me understand football at a whole different level. So I was very appreciative of everything he's ever done for my career. And he's one of the finest coaches that I've ever been around.
Nice.
Now, Hugh, we talked about quarterbacks before, but what are some of the other positions that are key in today's game? Well, as a coach, what are positions that a must-haves, non-negotiables that you need in today's game?
Well, so we said quarterback. We all know that that's the most important position in all of pro football. And when you look at offense, so then it becomes the tackle position, because the defensive ends in the National Football League, which is a premium position, is unbelievable. And if you can't block those guys, your quarterback will not be standing. Obviously, Aaron Donald, that's why he gets so much attention, because he's doing it as a defensive tackle. But the defensive ends, the Myles Garrett's of the world, the Barrett's of the world, you know, the JPP's of the world, those guys, if you don't get them blocked, your quarterback has no chance. So you better on offense have tackles that can protect. You better have a runner, because when the quarterback is not playing as well, you got to be able to turn around and hand the ball off. And normally you can find centers and guards. I think those guys are kind of interchangeable. Are there some great ones in the league? Absolutely. But you can normally find those positions in different rounds, and they come in all different shapes and sizes. And as long as they're tough, you can create a running game. You better have 1 to 2 receivers that are threats in the National Football League, or else you're going to get shut down. You can't be one-dimensional in the National Football League. So you got to have a guy that is respected. You got to have another guy that can make plays. And obviously you're going to have 2 other guys that can play. So that could look like a tight end that's a great player and a receiver. That could look like 2 receivers that's a good player and a tight end who's the 3rd or 4th. However you want to look at it. But those pieces on offense, you better have. On defense, it starts with rushers. If you can't rush and if you can't cover, you won't have a defense, because the ball is being thrown more in the National Football League. So if you can't rush the passer, so you got to have defensive ends that are one. You got to have one. You got to have a Myles Garrett on your team. You better have another guy who is respectable. You better have 2 good corners. You better have a safety that can play. And obviously, everybody wants a linebacker, a middle linebacker, because that's the guy that kind of leads the defense, you know, at the end of the day. You know, if you're in a division, and when you build these things, again, it becomes who is in the division. When you talk about the AFC North, normally it used to be Pittsburgh. And remember the years when Pittsburgh used to run the ball, right? Well, that's not the case anymore. Pittsburgh is now throwing the football. And when you look over at Baltimore, you better be able to slow Lamar Jackson down. You know, a lot of people say, well, okay, he doesn't throw it very well, but he can run it. So you have to be able to handle whatever's in your division. And that's how you start to build your team. You got to win in your division first before you can win anywhere. So those positions are dictated by how do I win the division? Okay. And so when you look at your team, those to me, the ends, the defensive backs, that in a nickel back, you better have those guys because more teams play in more three wide receiver sets than they play with traditional fullback and a tight end in the game. So it's so important that that third defensive back is a really good player too.
So coach, when you get a quarterback, like a young quarterback, what skills are essentially essential for that quarterback versus what skills can be taught and worked on?
The skills that are essential is what you drafted him for, right? He better be able to throw the football. He better be able to, the things we talked about earlier, demonstrate those things. Now, what I need to do is create an opportunity for him to get his wins, his personal wins. So what I need to do is do the things that he did somewhat in college that made him successful, that will give him a chance to feel like he's adding value to the offense. If you take a quarterback and you totally change everything he's ever done and don't give him a chance to do the things he did in college that got him drafted, he's not going to play very well. He won't play very well. I think trying to bring a young player who's a college player into the National Football League game and teach them, because it takes them about 3 years to learn defenses and different looks and how people are trying to disguise things and all of that. So it's imperative that the quarterback coach and the offensive coordinator do a great job of putting this guy in a position where he can be successful and make the complex really simple for him. And if you do that, then he has a chance. You look at where Josh Allen is right now in Buffalo. That's the kind of progression you want to see a guy have. Lamar Jackson, what he did in year two, even Baker Mayfield this past year, you know, those guys are ascending. Joe Burrow, the way he started, that's what you're looking for. And I give the coaches credit for that because they created environments for those guys to thrive and be the best they can be.
Has Baker peaked?
No, I don't think so. I really don't. I don't think so. Not yet. I think he's got a ways to go because I think he's still learning. I still think he's learned. I think he did a better job last year towards the end of the year of not forcing things and throwing the ball away. But I also think the staff did a better job of putting him in position to have success because, again, he's not an under center quarterback. Baker's a shotgun quarterback. Now, can he play under center and make plays? Absolutely he can, and he will. I mean, they all will at some point in time. But at the same time, you got to give him a chance to feel good about what he does. A guy wants a Heisman Trophy throwing the football from the shotgun. So let him do what he does.
No, that's true. Yeah, they put him in situations that he basically had to adjust to as opposed to what he's used to.
Well, I'll be the first to tell you, my first year there, because I wasn't the coordinator, Todd Haley was. I mean, it was almost like we were the Pittsburgh Steelers offense. You can't do that. That's not who he is. You know, and so early there was some growing pains, you know, and then as the season progressed for them, I think they saw, wait a minute, you keep this guy in the shotgun and let him play. And that's why he set all those rookie records that were just recently broke by the kid that's in San Diego, you know, but he did establish who he was. And then all of a sudden, you know, you go back and here comes a new coach again. And they are, you know, you just brought in a coach who's a run the football type of guy. And rightfully so. That's how you win games. They have Nick Chubb. They got the other Hunt, Kareem Hunt. So they have really good runners. So there's no doubt. But at the same time, you drafted a quarterback number one overall. And he don't want to hand the ball off all the time. He wants to throw the football. So they were trying to keep a semblance of their running game by keeping Baker under center, where Baker's value to the offense and what he could do was in shotgun. So they had to marry that, and that took them a little time, but eventually they did.
True. I mean, it's very early in the offseason. There's still a lot of changes that will happen, but who do you think is the strongest team in the AFC North?
In the AFC North, the strongest team, I still think it's Baltimore.
Okay.
I think Baltimore, because they are so good defensively, you know, with the offense that they have, it gives them a chance to kind of dictate the game. I think Cleveland is second now. I think Pittsburgh has fallen down to third, and that's because of the guys who retired, the center, the guard. I mean, you lose those guys. Those guys were great players. And let's look at Ben last year. He didn't have the best protection a year ago.
Correct.
So that's an issue. So I think it's Baltimore, it's Cleveland, and then it's Pittsburgh.
And who do you think Baltimore should be looking to add in the offseason? What position?
If I know Baltimore, especially after this past year and their passing game ranking, what, 31st, 32nd?
Yeah.
They have to go get pass catchers. They have to. And I think they'll sign somebody in free agency, and I think they'll draft a guy. They need to shore up their offensive line. You got a left tackle now, a guy who wants to play left tackle, I should say, who doesn't want to play right tackle, wants to be traded, because they have one of the best young left tackles in football in Stanley. You know, and so I would be trying to do everything I could to convince this young player that, man, you playing right tackle doesn't hurt your value. If anything, you might set the market for the right tackle position. So that's what I'd be trying to do, because I wouldn't want to lose a big body like that. Because if they lose him, then they got to start all over at right tackle. So they got to fix their offensive line. They have to get pass receivers, and they're going to always look for game changers on defense. That's just who they are. Me, I was in that organization. It's always been about defense in Baltimore, and it really shouldn't change. And if they can do those particular things and add a couple pieces on defense and add the pieces we just talked about on offense, I think they'll be hard to beat.
Do you think Lamar Jackson's MVP season was an outlier, or does he have that potential still?
Oh, no, I think he has that potential. But the more tape, you know, that is put out there on you, the more people are going to devise ways to slow you down and do things to, you know, not have you be successful. So at the end of the day, they need to evolve. And that's why they need better pass catchers. They need to revamp their system a little bit, because everybody knows that it's a run play system, you know, so very seldom does he just drop back and throw a football. There's a fake in there. There's a this. I'm not talking about on third down and certain situational football. I'm talking about on mixed down, first and second down. So they need to grow and come into the next age for him so that he continues to keep growing.
No, that's true. Yeah, I see what you're saying. So basically his limit is a bit capped because there's more tape on him. But as they improve that offense and add him weapons, who knows about what's possible, basically.
You got it.
I'll just have one last question for you. Would you ever go into a front office role? Have you ever considered being a GM?
No, I wouldn't do it. I love coaching too much. So if I'm going to stay in football, I'm going to coach. And if not, I'm just going to run my tequila business and enjoy it.
Well, let's go to that. Let's go to the tequila business. Yeah.
Gran Leyenda, I think it's the best tequila in the world. It's 100% USDA organic tequila. It's made in Jalisco in the Highlands. That's where our tequila is produced. We're scaling the business right now in several different states. Matter of fact, we're in 48 states right now because we're online. Country Wine and Spirits. And, you know, we're doing a lot of good things. So I've enjoyed that. And it's, you know, it's the only upper spirit in the world. You know, everything else is a downer. And I like what we do because it's organic and we don't add anything to our tequila like most people do, putting yeast and other things in it so they can mass produce. We're not interested in that. We try to do it right. And so I'm excited about where we are.
Nice. Gotta try me.
Absolutely.
Is it available in Canada?
Not yet. It's not available in Canada, but we're sure heading that way. That's for sure.
We are looking for sponsors, by the way.
Okay. Awesome. I appreciate you throwing that in there.
Yeah. Do a couple episodes hammered. That'd be interesting.
Yeah. Then they take you off air.
No. We don't want to get canceled. You also have a podcast. I believe it's the I Am Athlete podcast. What's that?
Yeah, it's not mine. That's Brandon Marshall. I'm a part of it. I've been on several shows of theirs. It's the House of Athlete that Brandon Marshall, former NFL player, 13-year player in the league, he created. It's a unbelievable platform. I think they have real conversations about real things that go on in football, life, just in general. And I think he's done a great job. We did a combine for players just a week ago, Friday, in Weston. That was awesome at Inter-Miami University with Kellen Mond, Amari Rodgers. Travis was there. He didn't work out, but he was there. We had several guys do some really good things. And so Brandon is really ahead of his time. I think the podcast is one of the top podcasts in all of the world right now. He's doing a great job that way. And it's been really good.
Marshall was money, by the way. Marshall was awesome. I'm a Denver Broncos fan, so.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah.
Well, before you go, are you in the process? Are you taking any interviews or anything? Are you looking to get back in there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I interviewed at Pittsburgh, but they hired from within. That was the only interview I had. I mean, it's tough. As I said, it's frustrating, but it's very tough. But that's the way it's been for men of color. And it's unfair, but that's how it goes. So you pivot and you do other things until, you know, it comes back around to you.
What's the hiring process like, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, it's normally it's, you know, people, your reputation normally precedes you, or it's somebody you know. They interview you. I'm sure they interview others, and then they make a decision between you and someone else about does the fit. It goes back to that same thing. Do you fit with the head coach and the rest of the staff that's already there? And then obviously you get an opportunity to showcase what you do.
Do they ask you questions about like the existing roster or what you would do in certain situations? I'm just intrigued by that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, those are the deep dive conversations that you have, you know, on the interview about how would you best help this player showcase his talent? How would you help this particular player get better from one of his weaknesses? All those things get asked. How do you handle situational football? All those things are really important to discuss.
Awesome. Thank you for that.
Sure.
So, Hugh, I know your time's at a premium, but if it's possible, I wouldn't mind if we could kind of run this back after the draft, maybe quickly, and just get your opinion on what certain teams did.
Absolutely.
I would love that, because I'm very interested sometimes when teams make certain picks. I personally don't understand why.
Right.
Right. I'd like to know. Nee and I actually have this ongoing thing for the last few years about why it is the Seattle Seahawks don't draft offensive line help, but...
Oh yeah,
we'll see.
I've been in those rooms where there are picks, like you're just saying, and you go, "What the hell did we just do?"
Exactly. You
know, that's part of it. You know. Yep.
No, that'd be perfect.
Yeah.
Okay, you got it.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You guys, be safe and take care, and God bless.
God bless.
Bye bye.
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 Thanks for listening, and be sure to join the Pro Sports Podcasters Facebook group, where you will be able to interact with the hosts and talk to other sports fans. Now back to the show.
Why are you excited for the return of the NWHL? What are you looking forward to seeing when the puck drops on Friday night?
Oh my God, that's a loaded question. I'm excited to see fierce competition. Honestly, like, this has been some of the most game-changing games I have ever seen. If we want to even talk from the Toronto Six perspective of losing the first two games, albeit one of them in overtime, coming back to now being the number one seed, who has a Cinderella story? That's just amazing. And then, you know, they're facing, I don't want to say their arch rivals, but she who should not be named. But, you know, I feel like we should name drop them, though, because...
Well, we had one of their players on our show, so it's only fair. I mean, the Boston Pride are the hosts of the bubble coming up at the end of the month. And at this weekend, the Boston Pride, they're in the fourth seed. They're facing Toronto Six. And we had one of their players, Teresa Vanishova, on. So we wish Teresa well, but we know that Toronto will come in with momentum. They'll want to finish the job in their inaugural season. And... Mm-hmm. Just listening to Digit Murphy's press conference, she's definitely getting the ladies prepped and hyped. They're not coming in complacent by the sounds of things. So just thinking about the other side of the semifinals, you got Minnesota up against Connecticut. What can you tell us about that matchup, Justin?
Okay, so here's the thing with Minnesota. When we saw them play, they're very tough. They're a very physical team, and... I'm almost worried about it because, so Minnesota, we know, have Nina Rogers, who is just 2 goals, 4 assists, 6 points, dominating. She's a force to be reckoned with. Their goalie, Amanda Lavelle, is top tier. You want your goalie to hang around 0.91? She's above that. Like, you can't even compare. And, you know, if we're looking over at Connecticut with Alisa Wolfen. Wolfenfler? I'm so bad with names. Wallifliffler? Wallifliffler. Forgive me, I genuinely don't know how to pronounce that last name. She has 5 points. Right? She has 1 goal and 4 assists. They don't have many goal scorers on Connecticut. they just crush with their defense because their defense is strong.
Right.
And their goalie is also sitting at a .936. So it's not going to be more so the scorers. It's going to be the goalies in this game. This is going to be a low-scoring game, and whoever gets the first goal, I'm convinced is going to win.
And that's the thing. Playoffs often bring out that kind of intensity. It's almost like a boxing match. The two competitors are feeling each other out. No one wants to give too much up. So I totally agree that a low-scoring encounter is something that could be on the cards when the puck drops later on Friday night. Now, this is significant, this Isabel Cup playoffs, because it's on NBC Sports Network. So that's great exposure for the league. You know, it's a national presence. It gets to inspire the next generation of hockey players. So we've got the semifinals on the Friday, the final on Saturday. All right. Well, hopefully it's an entertaining sequence of events come Friday night. And no matter what happens, Toronto has been a success this season. We can't deny that, because whether they win Isabel Cup or not, their success and the way that they've got people watching hockey in Canada on the women's side, it's already borne fruit for the future. We've got a new team coming out of Montreal for next season by the sounds of things. What's your take on that?
It should happen. I'm too excited for it. I want it now. I wanted it yesterday. I want them to be, you know what? It's like, you want a team? Bring the team in. We're going to start playing them right now. See what they mix up. I love hockey, right? I'm totally for it. And just, it's so exciting to see Montreal, a huge hockey fan group, get a women's team, because I know they're going to be just as supportive as the Toronto base is, which hopefully will inspire Vancouver, Calgary, Edmonton, because for some reason, Alberta is not satisfied with having one team. I say that knowing full well that Ontario has two teams and they're pushing for a third. But mind your business. And I would love to see like Saskatchewan get a team that doesn't have an NHL team and only has the Rough Riders. Mm. I would love for Saskatchewan to get a team, another team to rally around. Mm. It would be blissful. It'd be glorious. It would grow everything. And Saskatchewan is a beautiful place in the summer. If you like winter, I mean, Brock Lesnar lives there, so he likes it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he represents Canada in the UFC when he used to fight.
Nice.
For one time, actually, he did represent Canada. The rest was the U.S., but moving forward.
So, hang on, I'll just, moving backward just briefly. Let's say in an ideal world, we've expanded the NWHL a little bit. I'll give you 5 franchises that you can place in Canada. So, only 5? You can't have 6? So, where are they going?
Okay, so, and are we assuming that Toronto and Montreal don't exist, or do they exist?
They exist and they have their franchises. They're good to go. So, okay, you effectively get 3 more.
Okay, that's what I thought. I was like, I'm like, this isn't challenging at all. I would stick one in the East Coast. I would actually stick it in either PEI or Newfoundland. Now, I get that's not ideal for travel, but if this is anything goes, I want a team in Newfoundland. Mm-hmm. Just like the CFL was going to do, have their own East Coast team, which was going to be held in Halifax. Mm-hmm. I feel like an East Coast team would do very well. Also considering that Newfoundland is the home of the Toronto farm team, the Newfoundland Growlers, mm-hmm. who in their inaugural season also won their respective championship. So it's just good juju to be in Newfoundland. I'm just saying. Now to push forward, if I had another say, I would definitely put another one in Saskatchewan. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's an untouched market that just has so much potential to grow. So much. Because, you know, CFL runs for a few months of the year, and there isn't much more to really look at. But if they had a women's team, you bet your bottom dollar they would do well, because they do well also in the CHL, too. So I'd slap that up. Women's league all day, every day. And then I would want to do a team over in... I'm actually going to stop. I'm not going to go to Vancouver. I'm going to hit up...
Winnipeg?
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with Manitoba. I was going to go Alberta, but I chose against it. I was like, no. We're going to go with good old... we're going to go with Winnipeg. Because, again, Winnipeg is the Blue Bombers, and they have a great fan base with the Jets. As you know, due to popularity, the Jets came back after their hiatus from the NHL.
That's right.
Exactly. That proves there's a fan base. That proves there's love. That proves there's support. And... Winnipeg fans are freaking crazy. You know what I mean? They fully want a team there to to cheer on, to love, to support, because again, all they really have are, you know, the Blue Bombers and the Jets, and once that ends, there isn't much. So it'd be nice to have, although, you know, the NWHL and NHL run parallel, although the NWHL is a shorter season, it would inspire women to play more, and I love watching women's sports. You know, I don't like to stay behind the fact that people say it's not as competitive or fun to watch. It's on its own different level. It's like saying you don't like to watch, you know, up and coming kids play. And it's like, well, if that's not true, because the World Juniors are on and Canada goes buck wild when that's on.
No doubt.
I can name you more AAA team players when I was, my friends were in AAA, than I could NHL players. Like, Canadians love hockey and it's just our, it's our shtick. And so I don't care what you say. And a women's team would do phenomenally well in Winnipeg.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of it. When you expand to these smaller cities, the city tends to get behind it, and that can only be good for the game in general. You know? So hopefully that is something we see in the near to medium term.